Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans. Welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. Happy Friday to you. Patricia Traina here with you. I am your host, and it is Friday, October 11th. It is the day after the New York Giants Week 6 game against the New England Patriots, a 35-14 loss to the Patriots in Foxborough. The score looks bad, but actually some positives to come out of the game. And I'm going to have a couple of guests on the show, starting with Ed Valentine, who you'll hear from in just a moment. And we're going to talk about what we saw, what we liked, and what still needs to be changed up. And then I'm going to be joined in segments 2 and 3 by Mark Schofield, who breaks down Daniel Jones's performance and talks Patriots strategy, what the Patriots did and how the Giants handled it. And we're also going to talk a little bit about how the Giants attacked the Patriots. So lots on deck, and let's get right into it, shall we? And I'm joined now by Ed Valentine of Big Blue View. He's up first on today's day after show. Edward, welcome to the show. And night games, they're the pits. But I'll tell you what, the Giants, despite the score of a 35-14, some positives to actually take from that game yesterday.
There sure were, Patty. It was not an awful effort, you know, by the Giants at all. But you know, you're absolutely right about these night games. You know, I'm getting old for these, Patty. You know, I couldn't wait to go to bed last night once the game ended. So, but I got up this morning and I figured I'd just catch up today. But you know, as your listeners don't care about that, they care about the game. And yeah, you know, the Giants were, this was a one score game with 9 minutes to go. I think the Giants should feel real good about their effort last night.
Absolutely. And Ed, let's talk about that effort real quick. We got to start with the offense. Now, everybody made a big deal. No Sterling Shepard, no Evan Engram, no Saquon Barkley, no Wayne Gallman. Daniel Jones's numbers, if you look at them, not very impressive. 15 of 31 for 161 yards, one touchdown, three interceptions. But you know what? I think the numbers, as bad as they look, don't really tell the whole story with this young man.
No, now listen, you know, the folks that read Big Blue View know that I do a thing called Kudos and Wet Willies. And if you've read that, you know, on Monday morning, you know that I put Jones in the Wet Willies category. Now look, all three of those interceptions, Jones took the blame for. And all three of those interceptions, he deserved the blame for. One was an off-target throw. The first one was an off-target throw where he probably delivered the ball a little bit late. The second one, you know, he got his arm hit, you know, and the ball got intercepted. And that one was a case where he simply didn't give up on the play early enough and get rid of the ball and just throw it away. And the third one was a bad read. But look, he competed. He played hard. He wasn't in over his head. This is a rookie quarterback playing in his fourth NFL game. He made a great throw to Golden Tate. This is all, you know, this is all part of the learning experience. We knew that there were going to be rough games. And it's just, I'm not worrying about anything that I saw from Jones last night at all.
Yeah, I'm not either. They are learning experiences. And look, like you said, this was to be expected. Ed, let's talk real quick, though, about the defense, because I do want to I want to talk about the surprising defense. And, you know, it wasn't a clean game. There were still missed tackles. There were still were, you know, some stupid penalties. I'm thinking Janoris Jenkins's defensive penalty, which gave the Patriots new life. There were a few, you know, blown coverages. The safety is still kind of deep in coverage, I think, which leaves Grant Haley continuously exposed. But the Giants, I thought, played a more solid game up front. I think they got pressure on the Patriots offensive line, which was a weak link going into this game. I thought Dalvin Tomlinson had his best game of his career, and kudos to Alec Ogletree and David Mayo, who were just playing lights out against the run.
Did you steal my kudos for Mayo and Ogletree there, Patty? Come on. You know, listen, you know, nothing you said there is incorrect. I thought that the Giants had one advantage on New England coming into this game, and that possible advantage, you know, was up front, the Giants front seven against New England's sort of patchwork offensive line. And that showed up last night. It was night, you know, we saw Marcus Golden continue to be an impact player. We saw, I think, Lorenzo Carter's best game of the year. We did see Dalvin Tomlinson play well. This was a better effort for the Giants defense that you could tell after the game from some of the comments that the players felt good about it. It's something that they can build on, because we see that they do have some players who can impact the pocket. I'm still mostly concerned about the secondary. Some of the breakdowns in the secondary bother me, but this was still a better effort. I thought a step in the right direction. So, you know, as you look at a team that is still a work in progress, that is still trying to build, you know, I took last night's effort as a pretty good step forward.
And Ed, I have to give kudos to use your term to the pass rush. Now, if you remember at the start of the season, everybody, and you and I as well, were guilty of this. We wondered, where is the pass rush going to come from? And I went back and I'm working actually as we record this, I'm in the middle of writing an article, my takeaways on the game. The Giants had Marcus Golden now has 5 sacks on the season. And I think Olivier Vernon, whom he, of course, replaced, has 1, if I'm not mistaken, for the year. But here's the thing. Through 6 games, I believe the Giants have something like 16 sacks. And I think last year, through 6 games, they only had 6 sacks. So the pass rush is really coming on, and it's coming from different directions.
And this is one of the things, Patty, that I think we thought we were going to have to see, was the pass rush coming from a multitude of places. Alec Ogletree impacted the pass rush last night. David Mayo impacted the pass rush. Lorenzo Carter did push from the middle, from, you know, Dexter Lawrence and even, you know, Dalvin Tomlinson did at times. But for me, you know, one of the things that I really, really wondered when the Giants signed Marcus Golden, I think he had 12 and a half sacks for Arizona. I want to say it was the 2016 season, and he's had a couple of injury-plagued seasons since then. I really wondered if Marcus Golden, as the number one guy, you know, on a pass rush, you know, a couple of years removed from a good year, was going to be able to be an impact guy as the number one guy. And he's showing me that he can, and that's just huge for this team.
Absolutely. Now, Ed, I have to ask you this question, because this speculation, I guess, was kind of running a little rampant before the game started. Deion Buchanan is out there. I don't believe he has signed with anybody yet. The Giants were reported to be one of 4 teams interested in him. I know you said you got it from a source that was true. I heard it from a source that was true. Given what we saw from David Mayo and Alec Ogletree, if you're the Giants, do you still add Deion Buchanan if you can come to a deal with him?
Absolutely, Patty. Absolutely. Now, listen, I think, you know, take nothing away from Mayo and take nothing away from the way that Alec Ogletree played last night. But I just posted some of my own, you know, post-game thoughts at Big Blue View. And the question that I asked is, as we sit here with 10 games left in the 2019 season, we look at Alec Ogletree, who I think and you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he's in the last year of his contract, or at least all of the guaranteed money in Ogletree's deal has been paid out. Can you picture David Mayo and Alec Ogletree as your starting inside linebackers for the Giants in 2020? And right now, I can't. I know Ryan Connolly is hurt. I just look at it as a situation where Deion Buchanan is still a 27-year-old guy. He had his best years playing for James Betcher last year, and this year he was playing in systems other than the one that Betcher runs. I think he was running, he was playing in a 4-3, you know, with Steve Wilkes a year ago, and he wasn't playing at all in Tampa Bay. If they can come to an agreement that fits him under their salary cap, maybe it's a veteran minimum, maybe they have to sweeten it a little bit, I have no problem bringing this guy in for a 10-game flyer to see if he can be part of the solution going forward.
I'm with you on that, Ed, and that's also something that I have in my observations. You know, very good. It's amazing. You and I still think alike, even though we don't do these shows together anymore. We still think alike on a lot of topics. Isn't that scary?
Were we twins in a former life, Patty?
We must have been related or something. I don't know.
it's kind of scary, and you know, we shouldn't talk to your husband or my wife about it either.
Probably not a good idea. Probably a good thing that they don't listen to our respective podcasts. Ed, one last thought, and then I'll let you go. Overall, you know, now the Giants have 10 days, you know, before their next game. Coming out of these first six games, what still bothers you the most about this Giants team? What would you like to see them really hone in on and really fix before they next take the field?
Well, I can't really go to offense on this because they were missing so many weapons on Thursday night. I think the thing that still bothers me is coverage breakdowns. I think we still saw at times we saw better coverage. At times we see plays from DeAndre Baker. At times we see some good things from Jabril Peppers. We saw some better play from the linebackers last night. But there are still, for me, too many times when I don't understand what the Giants are trying to do in the secondary. There's too many times when wide receivers are running wide open. Even on the Janoris Jenkins interception last night, that wasn't good coverage by the Giants. That was maybe the worst ball Tom Brady's thrown in his entire NFL career. I mean, that was, you talk about wide right. That was maybe 5 yards wide right of a wide open Julian Edelman. So for me, I think it's, what are the Giants in coverage? Are they a man team? Are they a zone team? You know, are they a press coverage team? What are they? I still haven't figured that out. I still don't think they've figured it out. And I think that's the area that concerns me right now.
Safe to say, I agree with you again, Edward. I mean, just a lot, the zone coverages, the safeties are just so deep in coverage. I just, you know, we look at, like I said, Grant Haley, and I wrote this for my observations. Grant Haley gets burnt constantly, but then if you look at the zone, you know, the coverage where the safeties are playing, it's like they want to keep everything in front of them, but they're not playing, you know, as tightly as they can to eliminate those chunk plays that are coming underneath. Ed, great stuff as always. Appreciate you taking a few minutes to come on with me. Giant fans, stay tuned. We have Mark Schofield joining the program. He's going to give us his breakdown on Daniel Jones and what the positives were despite the three bad interceptions that he threw. We're going to talk about the strategy you've deployed and a whole lot more. We'll be back after these messages. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let the Vivid Seats app help you get to your favorite live event. Enter promo code KICKOFF at checkout to receive a discount of up to $100. I'm joined now by Mark Schofield of Inside the Pylon. He is the quarterback guru also for the Locked On NFL Network. And he also does some coverage of the New England Patriots hailing from that area. And Mark, good morning to you. Thank you so much for coming on the program with me again.
Oh, it's great to be back with you, and good morning to you as well. I know we were just talking how night games, they kind of throw the schedules off of whack. So I'm already into my second cup of coffee. We'll probably have a third by the time this morning is over. But we're ready to go here this morning. We're ready to go.
Well, you're a couple cups of coffee ahead of me. I haven't even had one yet. I'm trying to go at it. I'm trying to go at it without the caffeine. But Mark, let's start off with the game, just kind of how it unfolded. Now, the Giants actually wrestled to a 14-14 score at one point with the Patriots before, you know, the Patriots took a 21-14 advantage at halftime. Were you surprised that the Giants stood toe-to-toe with them for as long as they did, given the fact that they didn't have their top three offensive skill playmakers?
You know, in a sense, I was, because you look at the fact that obviously the New York Giants, they were banged up on the offensive side of the ball. We know historically rookie quarterbacks up against Bill Belichick, they tend to struggle. Rookie quarterbacks are now counting last night's game, you know, 0-12 at Foxborough against Bill Belichick. And so we knew it was going to be a tough road for the New York Giants overall. But at the same time, if you would have told Giants fans that, look, you were going to get, you know, a big play touchdown in the passing game, Daniel Jones is going to be the first quarterback this year to throw a touchdown pass against the New England Patriots and would come in the first half, you're going to get a strip sack, fumble, scoop, and score, and you're going to be down by one score at the half, receiving the second half kickoff, I think Giants fans would have taken that in a heartbeat. And some of what led to that is things that you could have seen coming, in a sense, because the Patriots offense is a bit unsteady right now, and part of it is due to injuries. And look, we're not going to obviously get, you know, any sort of sympathy from Giants fans or any fans about injuries on the, you know, either side of the ball from the New England Patriots. They're still trying to figure out who they have at different spots in terms of playmakers, at the wide receiver spot, at the tight end spot, at the running back spot, and so they're feeling their way through on the offensive side of the ball. At the same time, look, the New York Giants offense did some things against this defense that I think they should take from this game as positive signs. And I know moral victories aren't really, they don't count for anything in the standings, but the Giants offense moved the ball at times. Daniel Jones, yes, he made some mistakes, but made some impressive throws. And you can see that this offense, when everybody is on the field at the same time, when everybody's healthy and Daniel Jones has some more games under him, is going to be a productive offense, is going to put points on the board. And this defense for the New York Giants played extremely well. You know, I came into this game believing that the Patriots were going to have a ton of success throwing against the Giants linebackers. Obviously, they'd like to get James White involved in the passing game. They did a little bit of it with Sony Michel, included on the very first offensive play from the New England Patriots, where they put him into motion and got him in the flat. So they're trying to get those running backs involved against the linebackers. But Mayo and others played extremely well. I was impressed with the Giants linebackers last night. So I was surprised in one sense, but given how the game sort of unfolded and given what we've seen from these teams so far, it almost seemed to go according to script, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of surprised too, a little bit, you know, with the offense, and again, some mistakes made by Jones. But Mark, can we talk about some of the things that are learning experiences for Jones coming out of this game?
Well, I think what was interesting about the Bill Belichick game plan last night was I was worried about blitzing Daniel Jones too much, because when you see Daniel Jones, the quarterback at Duke, when you see Daniel Jones, the quarterback that he is now, he's been at his best when he's making quick decisions with the ball, getting it out of his hands. He's extremely accurate in the short area. You know, those that watch the broadcast, you heard Troy Aikman sort of marvel at some of the slant routes that he threw last night. He had one to Slayton that I don't know how he got it into his chest, but he did. So I was afraid that blitzing Daniel Jones would sort of play to his strength. But the thing that Daniel Jones sort of needs to learn is that you don't have to artificially speed up your reads and your process just because you're getting pressured. I was stunned when I sat down at the end of that game, you know, recorded my post-game show, to look at the box score and realize that the Patriots only sacked him once. And it was technically barely a sack, because it was that play-action rollout where Daniel Jones got back to the line of scrimmage, but it goes down in the books as a sack for no gain by Kyle Van Noy. But this was one of those games where pressure equaled production, because they started to hurry him up. He started to speed up his internal clock. And the one interception that I really would say was on Daniel Jones was the one he threw to Gilmore when he just sort of misread the coverage, because he thought he saw something. He missed Gilmore underneath. He misread the coverage in the secondary and basically threw it right to the defensive back. And that's an example of a quarterback getting impacted by the pressure, speeding up his process, and because he's impacted by the pressure that he's feeling on so many different plays, even though it's not really getting home, and being too quick with his decision. That's a situation where he needs to realize the blitz wasn't coming there. You had time. Make sure of the throw and get the ball out. That was a situation where, look, Giants go down, they score, they potentially tie that game. Who knows what we're saying this morning? And so this game could have looked a lot different if Jones read the coverage better on that play. And so I think that's the main lesson for him. Look, you can play in this league. You can be a quarterback in this league. You can make all the throws that you need to make. It's just don't rush yourself. Sometimes you have time. Take advantage of those moments and make the right decision with the football.
Mark, when you looked at what the Giants did last night against the Patriots, did anything kind of jump out at you and leave you scratching your head regarding the offensive strategy or any of the calls that were made?
I was impressed at times that they went tempo. I thought that's a nice thing to do with a young quarterback to sort of get him into the flow of a game. Sometimes if you get a defense, like they did it once when the Patriots had a sub package on the field with Michael Bennett, who only saw, I think, 10 or 14 snaps. And I believe Shalique Calhoun was in the game. And so they went tempo to try to take advantage of him and say, look, we've got some of the backups in there. Let's go tempo to try to take advantage of that. And I thought that was smart. But there were also some times where they went tempo against New England starters, and I think that's probably a time not to do that. And this might be sort of a feeling out process, seeing what Jones is comfortable with. So I liked sometimes when they did it. There are other times I didn't like when they did that. I honestly thought this was a game to sort of involve Daniel Jones' athleticism a bit more. They called a couple of those sort of zone read type plays, and I thought there were opportunities there to let Daniel Jones pull it and keep it a couple of times. Because even if you just do it once for, you know, a 10-yard gain or something, that's one more thing that those defensive ends have to think about. And the Patriots, for the most part, do a very good job at sort of, you know, staying home on those plays. John Simon, Kyle Van Noy, you know, Jamie Collins on the edge at times. But if you pull and keep one of those after you've gotten the ground game going, which the Giants did a pretty good job at times getting some good runs, you know, it's going to give them one more thing to think about. So I was surprised that they didn't do more of that and let Jones use his athleticism. You know, you see it with quarterbacks like a Josh Allen or a Lamar Jackson or a Mitchell Trubisky, some of these younger athletic guys, those coaches let them use their legs. I would have liked to have seen a bit more of that last night.
Did it surprise you also that they made Golden Tate the center of the offense? I mean, especially in the passing game, Tate finished with 6 catches out of 9 targets, 102 yards. And I think going into this game, I mean, I suspected Tate was going to be the go-to guy. And I'm sure Belichick knew that. I mean, did it surprise you that they didn't spread the ball out a little bit more?
I mean, I think that's partly a function of the coverage matchups that they were seeing. You saw a lot of Stephon Gilmore and Darius Slayton last night. You know, Gilmore right now is playing perhaps better than any cornerback in the game. And, you know, he showed a lot of that last night, his hands at the catch point and things like that. And so when you're getting Golden Tate matched up against Jonathan Jones and other defenders in that secondary, you're probably going to want to go there. You know, they involved Tate on some crossing routes, and those have tended to give the Patriots some trouble dating back the past couple of seasons. And so that didn't surprise me. You know, seeing Tate win against Jonathan Jones on that slot fade for the touchdown, that did surprise me. Jones is a very quick player. The coverage seemed to be pretty good. He recovered well, but Tate won that matchup, you know, obviously with the catch down, with the catch and the touchdown. So I think it was sort of a combination of what you were seeing in the secondary and, frankly, who you had to throw to, given the injuries that the Giants had on the offensive side of the ball.
Mark, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk Giants defense versus Patriots offense. If you found $100 on the street, would you pick it up or would you keep on walking? Well, of course you'd take the money. So why do you keep picking winners and not betting on them? Well, if you want to start putting money in your pocket, check out MyBookie. It's fast, it's easy, and they pay when you win. Let's face it, where you're betting is just as important as whom you're betting on. And when you bet with MyBookie, the options are endless. For example, did you know that MyBookie allows you to bet on games after kickoff? If by the second half it looks like your bet is going to lose, you can always just take the other side. Or if you're the kind of person that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings. No matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of the year. And when you join MyBookie now and use the promo code LOCKEDON, MyBookie will double your first deposit. So go on and visit mybookie.ag. And don't forget, use the promo code LOCKEDON to activate the special offer for new users. MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. Back, Giant fans. Patricia Traina here with you, and I'm joined by Mark Schofield, and we are breaking down the Giants' loss to the Patriots. It was a little bit more competitive than I think a lot of people thought. It was ended up being 35-14, but the Giants' defense, you know, wasn't perfect, but you know what? They came to play. And Mark, I think we've got to start with the matchup. And I know when we spoke about the game before, in a podcast last week, we talked about the offensive line of the Patriots and that being a weak spot. What did you think about how the Giants attacked that Patriots offensive line?
Well, I think they did a lot of the things that I sort of expected. They ran some stunts, they ran some twists, they got after the interior. You know, guys like Tomlinson and company seem to have some success getting some penetration at times. They got after Newhouse, the left tackle. You know, he was beaten on the inside on Patriots' second drive of the game for a sack on first and 10, which really put sort of New England behind the sticks. And this is an offense right now that on the New England Patriots, it needs to be on schedule. And so they did some of the things that I sort of expected to see. And that's how teams have been attacking this offensive line. Now, I think the other thing to sort of, again, reiterate is the ability of these second level defenders to make some plays. And I think that was a huge part of the way the Giants were able to keep this game close and to keep it competitive into the second half. And it started on the opening drive. You have a 4th and 1. New England goes with an outside zone and Mayo gets to the ball carrier. It stops him short of the sticks. Obviously, if Sony Michel extends the ball there, it's probably a first down. But that's a huge play. You know, when you win the toss, you defer on the road to give Tom Brady the football and you stop them on 4th and 1. That is a massive momentum swing for a team early in the game. And I think that sort of set the tone for what this defense did last night in the New York Giants. They, you know, they were athletic. They were quick. Another example is that 3rd and 3 toss play in the second half where James White didn't have a chance. The Giants were just too quick for that. You know, when they ran that sort of fake fly sweep thing with, they start White out to the, you know, he's flexed out to the left. He looks like he's shifting back into the backfield, and then they just toss it to him. It almost worked for a touchdown earlier, but Josh McDaniels came back to it. And again, you saw those Giants, you know, second-level defenders, athletic, quick, get into the edge, preventing that from getting going, stopping it for a 3rd down and forcing a field goal try, which was a doink shot. Those were the types of plays that they needed to make. Those were the types of plays that perhaps we hadn't seen from the Giants defense yet this year, but they made them last night. And I think that, again, you know, again, moral victories, they don't count for anything in the standings, but this was a performance I think the Giants defense could be certainly pleased with for the most part.
And of course, you know, everybody talks about Tom Brady and how he's just, you know, and rightfully so, he's earned it, how he's this, you know, fantastic quarterback, but he actually looked quote unquote human last night, I thought.
He did. He certainly did. And, you know, not to make excuses for either of these quarterbacks, but the toughest set of weather conditions to deal with is wind. You know, having played the position for over a decade, if it's rainy, if it's snowy, you can deal with that. You can dry your hands, you can dry the ball. But wind, particularly wind gusts, when it sort of is an uncertainty, that can have an impact. And I think both quarterbacks were struggling to sort of get a feel for the wind last night. I don't know if the interception Brady threw after the turnover, you know, that pass intended down the middle of the field for Edelman, I don't know if that was a wind situation. I don't know if that was a route miscommunication. I don't know if it was just a bad throw. You know, might have been all of the above, but I think both quarterbacks were sort of struggling with that. And again, with Tom Brady, you know, they lost one of their 2 tight ends that they only had rostered. So all of their 2 tight end packages had to be out. They lost their backup fullback, Jakob Johnson. So all of their fullback 21 personnel packages had to be out. They lost Josh Gordon in the middle of that game. And so into the second half, they were basically playing just 11 personnel with Gunnar Olszewski and Jacoby Myers, you know, 2 undrafted rookie free agent types. And so, you know, there was not too much you could have in the playbook for that package of players and personnel. And so there were a lot of things that sort of got thrown into both of these quarterbacks, obviously dealing with injuries and the like. So that's yet another reason why perhaps the passing games weren't exactly on point last night. But the overall point about Tom Brady, perhaps being on the back 9 of his career and looking human and things like that, that's certainly true. I mean, there are throws that he used to be able to make in his sleep that even in the best conditions, he sometimes misses right now. And is he perhaps a number one, number two, number three quarterback in the league right now? I wouldn't put him there, but I would still say if I had a game to win and you could give me my choice of any quarterback, he'd be on the list of guys I'd take.
And in terms of the Giants' back end of the defense, it just seemed, you know, and this is on a first glance, I haven't had a chance yet to look at the film, so I'm going to rely on your expertise here, but it looked like for every play the Giants' back end of the defense made, they gave up a big play. I'm thinking, you know, in terms of, you know, Grant Haley struggled again in the slot. Janoris Jenkins had a very bad penalty. I think I saw Jabril Peppers miss a bad tackle. What did you think of the Giants' defensive back?
Yeah, I mean, this Patriots offense, and even with the guys they were able to roll out last night and the schemes they were still able to call, it puts so much stress on the defense, especially those second and third levels, especially guys in the slot, because you see so much of Julian Edelman running option routes out of the slot. You know, Peppers missed a tackle, but it's against James White in the open field, who is very good and shifty after the catch with great change of direction skills. And so you're going to stress these guys. The Jenkins penalty, where he basically, you know, tackle Julian Edelman off the line, that's because you're trying to cover these routes, which are tough to cover in space because they're so quick with change your direction skills. And sometimes you get tangled up and you do what you have to do. You know, I think a prime example of sort of the struggles for the Giants secondary was the one big vertical throw to Edelman on that stutter and go, where he was basically bracketed with inside out coverage, but he was still able to get over the top of the defense. You know, Brady makes a decent throw and Edelman comes down with a fantastic, you know, dive and catch to, you know, secure the ball. I think that's a nice example where you've got the guy bracketed because you're not worried about the other guys, Jacoby Myers or Ryan Izzo or Gunnar Olszewski. You want to bracket Julian Edelman, take him away, and he's still able to get over the top of your defense. And so I think that's probably the play more than anything that illustrated the night that the Giants secondary had. You have the coverage called to beat this guy, to stop him from making a play, and he still gets over the top of you.
Mark, how much does the fact that the Giants defense, I think, played 78 snaps 78 snaps. I'm looking at the game book here. I mean, do you think that overall by the end of the game there, they were starting to get a little winded?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, without a doubt. I mean, that's a huge number to begin with. And that would be a huge number if this game came on Monday night, if this game came after a bye and it was on a Monday night, but you're getting it on a short week. And, you know, we've heard from players that, you know, you don't feel normal. You don't feel close to 100%. You know, everybody's banged up even at this point in the season, but until like Wednesday afternoon. But now you've got to come out and play a game the next night. Like, it's a short recovery time. And then to have to go on the road up against the New England Patriots, you know, they tried to be physical at times. They tried to wear them down. They tried to run the ball. And you have to play 78 snaps. That's a lot to handle. And, you know, it was just, I know sometimes people sort of make fun of the whole body blow argument where you beat up on a defense and you wear them down into the second half and into the fourth quarter. But last night was kind of an example of that. And it's not like New England's running game was devastated or anything like that. It's just short week on the road, 78 snaps. That's tough for any defense to handle.
Were you surprised that the Giants special teams, which has usually been pretty good? I mean, they had a huge, you know, gaff, if you will. And it's interesting, you know, on that block punt, one of the things we had written over at Inside Football, we had talked about how the snaps were coming back and they were a little on the slow side. Now, there were a bunch of things, and we're not just saying that the snap was the issue. It was one of the issues, but you had Nate Stupar getting pushed back, despite the fact that, you know, special teams is his forte. And then it looked like the ball got off of Riley Dixon's foot a little too low. But were you kind of surprised that that was the play that kind of cracked it open a little bit for the Patriots?
In a sense, I was surprised because, like you said, the Giants are usually pretty solid on special teams. But the Patriots, you know, they seriously stress, you know, the importance of all three phases of the game. They put a lot of effort into the special teams game. You see a lot of guys that are basically starters or close to starters. I mean, two players on that play that played a big role. One was Brandon Bolden, who got a lot of run last night at the running back spot, who basically drove the personal protector back into the lap of the punter. And then Chase Winovich, who gets a lot of playing time at the defensive end spot, especially on third and long situations. And he had a sack earlier in this game. And so the Patriots obviously place an emphasis on the special teams portion. We've seen them block punts before this season. You know, they had one up in Buffalo that was a punt block for a touchdown. So I'm surprised in sort of the way it unfolded, because usually you would see an actual block, not driving the personal protector back into the punter and the punt basically going off his back. but I'm not surprised that the Patriots defense and special teams came up with some scores.
Mark, final question. If you're the Giants, I know there's no such thing as a medal for trying, to quote, you know, the title of Bill Parcells' famous book, No Medals for Trying, but, you know, and moral victories don't count in the standings, but still, given how this game unfolded, is this something that they can take, that they can build on? And what does this do for a team's confidence, considering that this is a team that a lot of people see as rebuilding?
You know, I flash back to 2000-2001, that season, when coming off their Super Bowl, the St. Louis Rams' greatest show on turf, went up to Foxborough for a Sunday night game, I believe. And the Patriots there with, you know, Tom Brady, and they're trying to figure things out on both sides of the ball. They held them to a one-score game. While they lost, they learned that night that they could play with anybody. You know, the fact that they were able to slow down that offense, the greatest show on turf, that they were able to hang with the defending Super Bowl champions, gave them the belief that they could win games and they could, you know, compete at a high level. And when they went on to beat St. Louis in the Super Bowl, a lot of Patriots players and coaches said, look, you know, we learned that night that, yeah, we lost, but we can play with anybody. And that game was sort of the catapult for the rest of the run that they made into a Super Bowl and winning a Super Bowl. And so, not to say that the Giants are going to go on and do that this year, but you can certainly use these sort of measuring stick games and say, yeah, okay, look, we lost. And obviously, like you said, moral victories don't count in the standings. You don't get points per victories. They don't count for tiebreakers or anything like that. But it builds confidence in an organization that, look, we're not that far away. And yes, there are things we need to fix. And yes, there are guys that are hurt that if they come back, we'll be more competitive. And yes, Daniel Jones needs to get better, but he's into what, his fourth start now? Like, calm down. Like, it's going to be okay. You can play with teams like the New England Patriots. You can play with the New England Patriots on the road on a short week and hold them to a one-score game into the second half when nobody thought you had a prayer of doing that. And so I think you take from that what you can. It builds a bit of confidence, and you go into the rest of the schedule. And look, you know, you've got Arizona next week at home. That's a winnable game. Detroit looks a little bit better in 2 weeks, but you can probably win that one. You're not that far away. You know, even in the NFC East, which we thought was going to be a very difficult division with the rosters that Dallas and Philadelphia have, you're not that far away. So this could be one of those games that gives the overall organization a bit of a boost of confidence as you get into the second half of the season.
Mark, good stuff as always. Really appreciate you coming on. And was a long game last night, a late game. Still, you're as sharp as ever, and I appreciate it so much. And we'll talk to you again down the line.
Sounds great. Thanks as always for having me on. And I got to say, you got to get some of the coffee in you. It gets you going in the morning on a day like this.
Definitely. I think I'm going to definitely have to do that. All right, Giant fans, that'll wrap it up for today's show. That'll wrap it up for this week. I want to thank you as always for listening. I want to thank you for participating in the Twitter mailbag. And I want to thank Ed Valentine and Mark Schofield for coming on the program. We'll be back on Monday with a brand new week of shows. Look forward to talking with you at that time. Have a great weekend and we'll talk soon.